You know, in this populous and intricate land of ours, some pretty strange things go on from time to time. And you meet some pretty interesting people. These people and things appear in our headlines and feature stories until over a period of years, they tend to make a pretty fair picture of our life and times. And we think some of their stories make pretty good telling. So, we'd like you to meet Howard Culver and his stories from the American scene.
Thank you, Lyle Bond, and good morning. Say, did you ever stop for just a minute and think about all the really amazing things that we just take for granted? Many of them we use daily without a thought as to why they work or how or, well, the reasons why they were developed. This idea started running around in my head the other day when I got a wrong number from a telephone operator. I suppose it was all my own fault. I was in a hurry, kind of, and trying to get one of those valley numbers that you can't dial, and, well, I probably sounded like my mouth was full of mush, but it started me thinking about human error as against, well, the dial system. Now, all you have to do is wiggle your fingers six or seven times in the proper sequence, and you get the right number every time. Almost. There isn't a chance that the dial system can misunderstand you. This is really pretty wonderful if you stop and consider the problems a telephone operator would have in cosmopolitan cities like Bombay or Singapore, or even parts of New York, as far as that's concerned. The simple question, number, please, might bring an answer in any one of a couple of dozen languages or dialects. And to give adequate service, the operator would have to be familiar with all of them, but not the dial. To it, all languages are the same. You just grind in the right bunch of numbers, and it will unfailingly grind out the right connection. And this minor miracle is precisely what gave rise to its invention. Oddly enough, by an undertaker. That's right. His name was Ammon B. Stroger, and he lived in Kansas City some 60 years ago. Like many of the subscribers to the adolescent telephone system of the 80s, he had a good deal to say about the service, and he said it loud and often. But the payoff came one day when he learned that because the operator had mistakenly reported his line busy to a prospective customer, he had lost an order. Well, Stroger wasn't all backward about voicing his opinion of the telephone system in general, and the operator in particular. Can't you just hear him now? He even announced his intention of doing something about it, which caused a good deal of amusement among the technical telephone people of the day. And a year later, they laughed even harder when the determined undertaker took out his patent and set up a company in LaPorte, Indiana. But little by little, the company took hold. Until today, more than half of the world's 50 million telephones are automatic. That's over 25 million automatic telephones. So I guess that the high degree of efficiency that has been achieved by modern telephone systems is pretty much due to the fact that because of a mistaken busy signal back in 1888, Ammon Stroger failed to sell a coffin. It's funny how a little incident like that could affect the course of a major industry. And while we're on the subject of modern development, let's take a look at modern medicine. Did it ever occur to you how many of our modern medical practices started out as superstitions? Well, maybe I should have said how many early superstitions proved practical enough to be adopted into modern medicine. You take the business of slapping newborn babies. It's common surgical practice to give them a couple of good solid whacks to get their breathing apparatus started. And it generally results in a noisy and obvious indication that things are working out pretty well. But for generations, the whacks were administered for a completely different reason. Because of a superstitious belief that if a baby didn't cry at birth, it would grow up weak and sickly. It's probably true, but I don't think superstition had much to do with it. And long before vaccination was dreamed of, the milkmaids of England claimed that exposure to cowpox had made them immune to the dreaded smallpox. Now, their claim was based upon experience during epidemics, but it took centuries for Dr. Jenner to prove them right by introducing to modern medicine a vaccine made from cowpox-infected animals. Yeah, sometimes the old-fashioned ways proved right by modern standards. But you know, there's nothing right or modern about the old-fashioned way of scrubbing a linoleum or hardwood floor. Backaches and sore red knees were expected in Grandma's day, but There's no longer any need for these endless hours of scrubbing. Believe me, scrubbing is needless with the new Bruce floor cleaner. Because Bruce waxes as it cleans. And with the Bruce Doosit applicator, you do the whole thing standing up and with no more effort than pushing around a dust mop, which is pretty simple. All you have to do is pour a little Bruce floor cleaner on the floor, then loosen the dirt and erase spots and marks with the applicator. Then with a clean, dry pad, wipe up the dirt, polish the floor at the same time. So, my advice is get rid of those old-fashioned cleaning ailments. Get Bruce floor cleaner and be modern. Oh, say, I just thought of another modern remedy that began with a superstition. This one is generally associated with brooms, black cats, and witches. As a matter of fact, Shakespeare mentions it in the witches scene from Macbeth. Boiled toads. Yeah, I know it doesn't sound too pleasant, and I don't mean to give the impression that your doctor is going to prescribe them for you, but they really did have their place. Yeah, toads, boiled up and served to the unhappy sufferer, were considered a prime remedy for heart ailments. Superstition? Well, maybe. But recently, medical science discovered what practitioners of the arts of witchcraft must have learned from observation, that the skin of a toad contains a secretion whose action on the heart is almost identical to that of digitalis. Now, I don't want to get anyone to get the idea that I'm advocating a return to the Dark Ages, but it is kind of interesting to note how many of the early superstitions have turned out to be of great scientific value in the light of modern knowledge. Our ancestors may not have known why, but a great many of the things that we use today seem to be in good, solid remedies for them, too. Gee, it seems to me that we've been doing a good deal of looking back today, haven't we? But right now, let's get a little more up to date. Just a little. Let's come up to March 1931. That was the month that Bing Crosby recorded one of his first big hits called Out of Nowhere. Remember?
Came to me from out of nowhere. You took my heart and found it free. Wonderful dreams, wonderful schemes from nowhere. Made every hour sweet as a flower to me. And if you should go back to your nowhere, leaving me with a memory, I'll always wait for your return out of nowhere, hoping you'll bring your love to me.
Well, that was a fine old tune. It sure brings back memories, doesn't it? You know, every now and then I seem to get the urge to drag out the soapbox and do a little crusading. And looks like it's about time again, the old feelings creeping on me. You know, there's nothing like a good crusade to get things stirred up a little. And if you stir them up enough, they seem to improve some before the subject at hand sinks back into oblivion for another time. So let's see if we can stir up a little fuss about smog. We've all heard a lot of talk and read quite a good deal in the papers about smog during the last few months, and I suppose that we're all pretty well agreed that something should be done about it. But it wasn't until just the other day that I realized just how bad this smog situation really is. And it took a rainstorm to show me. Yeah, it rained. And for the first time in months, the air was clear enough so that you could get a good look at some of our surrounding scenery. And you know, it was beautiful. Even more, it was spectacular. Of course, it didn't last very long, but for a couple of days you could see the mountains all around us with startling clarity. In fact, if anyone looked, they very likely discovered one of those rare but much joked about clear days on which you can see Catalina. Sort of like if you'd taken a pair of very dirty glasses off and put on clean ones. Which reminds me of something else I wanted to tell you about. You know, there's no reason for you folks who wear glasses to be troubled by dirty lenses. Not if you know about Sight Savers. Sight Savers are a development of the Corning Glass Company Laboratories, and they're especially designed to help protect your eyes. Not only do they clean your glasses to a crystal clearness, they also leave a protecting coating of silicone. Now, this is a protective film that helps prevent glare and keeps your glasses clean longer. The wonderful part is that they are available at your drugstore for only 10 cents. That's right. One dime buys a pack the size of a book of matches. A handy pocket pack that'll last you for days. So, don't add to the smog that you have to look through because of dirty glasses. Get Sight Savers at your drugstore and get a new look at life. But now, getting back to this smog business. I don't want to stir up a great burning issue. We've got a lot of people working on the problem, and we've passed some laws to try and correct it, and we'll probably pass more. But I'd like to hear from some of you, sort of get an idea of your views on the subject and of any special problems it may have created, like dirty wash on the line or something like that. Maybe we can get some of our listeners to help you solve your problems, sort of exchange help. Now suppose we take another trip back through time, back to meet a man whose live story pretty well proves an old adage, truth is stranger than fiction. We're on a wide city street that curves gracefully down a gentle slope to meet the broad blue waters of the Pacific. It's early morning, so early that the city is just beginning to shake off its mantle of sleep and prepare for the day's activities. And on this, its Central Avenue, only three figures move, a man and two dogs. The man is of medium height, but a striking figure. He is, in fact, somewhat reminiscent of Napoleon, both in stature and dress, for he wears a costume of navy blue profusely adorned with brass buttons, and his shoulders are topped with massive gilt epaulets. Clearly, this is a man of some importance out for his morning constitutional, an admiral, perhaps, or a minister of state. As he walks, he studies with great deliberation a piece of paper which he holds in his hand. Slowly, a smile works its way into the seams and crags of his rugged face. The smile spreads, becomes a grin and chuckle, until at last he roars with laughter. A man of his obvious dignity and position laughing uproariously on a city street at 6 o'clock in the morning? Surely this bears investigation. Perhaps we can steal a glance over his shoulder at the telegram which appears to be the cause of this immodest display. I wish to express my deepest gratitude for your offer of support in the present emergency. Also, I have a story to tell which I am sure you will appreciate. But at present, I am too busy settling accounts with a seedy character named Davis. Signed, Abraham Lincoln. Surely this is a figure of great importance to be so intimate with the President of the United States. And so he is. For as he regains his composure and continues on his way, he begins to meet others on the street, and in all cases, the procedure is the same. The citizen halts, bows respectfully, and murmurs, "Good morning, Your Highness." Yes, this man, this intimate of Lincoln, is emperor of the fair land that he looks upon. It is his picture that adorns the currency in his pocket, his name upon the proclamations in the town square. Yet it seems strange indeed that so mighty a monarch would walk the streets of his capital this warm summer morning with no other attendants than the two dogs following close by his heels. No man could ask for more faithful retainers, but an emperor should go forth with pomp and circumstance, with trumpets blazing and the palace guard mounted on fiery steeds, so that all who saw would know of his might and glory. But now the emperor and his two ambling attendants have reached the square. He reaches into his coat pocket for a piece of paper which he tacks to a bulletin board provided for such things. Let us glance at the momentous words he has posted. Proclamation. It is hereby commanded that bridges be built, one to link San Francisco with Oakland, and one to span the Golden Gate for the purpose of providing commerce and communication with our neighbors to the north. Signed, Norton the First, Emperor of the United States and Protector of Mexico. And now before the conclusion of our story, here's a message from the makers of Tide.
Tide's in, dirt's out, T-I-D-E, Tide.
Tide is Procter & Gamble's amazing new discovery for the whole family wash. Tide washes clothes cleaner than any soap made. Yes, Tide washes clothes cleaner, cleaner, cleaner. Tide gets white clothes dazzling white because they're cleaner. Tide actually brightens colors because they're cleaner. Tide not only leaves clothes free from ordinary dirt, but actually removes dingy soap film, too. Tide never yellows white clothes. Tide gets everything cleaner, even heavy work clothes. Yet Tide is truly safe for all your bright, washable colors. And Tide gives oceans of suds, even in hardest water. Try Tide next wash day. There's nothing like it.
Tide's in, dirt's out. Tide gets clothes cleaner than any soap.
Any soap?
Yes, any soap. Tide gets clothes cleaner than any soap. T-I-D-E, Tide.
That's sound advice, believe me. And now back to the conclusion of our story. Norton the First, Emperor of the United States, was one of the best known and most beloved characters to grace the early days of the fabulous city of San Francisco. At one time, a highly successful speculator, his mind became clouded at the loss of his fortune, and he sincerely believed that he had been proclaimed emperor by legislative decree. And ridiculous though they were, his claims so appealed to the citizens of his warm-hearted capital that they were moved to provide a small degree of the regal splendor which he claimed as his birthright. They paid the modest taxes which he occasionally levied, and in all ways treated him with the respect due such an exalted personage. Only once was he arrested by an overeager young deputy and hailed before a lunacy commission. But he was immediately discharged with a state apology and a verdict which read in part, "Emperor Norton has shed no blood, robbed no one, and despoiled no country," which is more than can be said for others in his line of business. And that seems to me to be a pretty good thought with which to leave you for today.
Join us again tomorrow at this time for more tales of people, places, and things when we again present Howard Culver and his stories from the American scene.